Welcome to the Connections Podcast, a podcast devoted to how Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo connect to our beloved community. I'm Jack Brennan, Connections at UUSM. Our guest today is Becky Howland. Becky grew up in Morris Plains, New Jersey, and Allentown, Pennsylvania. Her stay-at-home mom was trained as an operating room nurse and sported a big, no-nonsense personality in a compact 4'11" body. Her dad was tall, skinny, and nerdy, and worked at Bell Laboratories in the early days of the semiconductor industry. Her big brother, John, still lives in Allentown and has been attending UUSM remotely for about a year now. Her little sister, Renee, lives near Springfield, Massachusetts, and bosses around the vestry from her position as senior warden at the Mount Holyoke Episcopal Church. Becky was a shy, dorky wisp of a thing who excelled in school and art. She took piano and flute lessons, but she had such stage fright that she once fainted on stage at her piano recital before playing a single note. Socially, she lived in the shadow of her popular athletic younger sister, but she distinguished herself as a scholar. Becky sang in the children's choir at her Episcopal church, where she learned to pronounce church Latin. She played the auto harp for the children's service downstairs and the occasional flute duet or solo in the adult service. Attending Sunday school was a weekly evil, necessary because her father was the head of the Sunday school. Becky escaped religion as soon as she was permitted, which was age 12, the age of reason. Her senior year of college is the first time Becky sang in a serious singing group, the newly formed Handel Society. Becky hopes Joel never listens to this podcast because he is not at all fond of Handel. Yes, they sang the Messiah that year. Most of what Becky knows about Christianity comes not from the crushingly dull Sunday school classes, but from Handel's Messiah and Jesus Christ Superstar. Becky moved to the Bay Area for a graduate school. Her first year of grad school, she joined the Stanford University chorus and read all the great works of Russian literature in translation. So not that much of a scholar. She also managed to scrape by in her classes across campus in the applied physics department. After a detour to the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, studying protein crystallography, Becky returned to Stanford and finally graduated with a thesis having the catchy title, Determination of Dopant Site Occupancies in Copper Substituted Yttrium Barium Copper Oxide. She continued singing in the university chorus and took a group voice class to help her get over her fear of speaking in front of people, figuring that if she could sing in front of people, she could probably speak. It helped. Becky joined a Stanford startup and then a larger company. A small company, then boomeranged back to the large company. Her career was mostly in technical marketing, technical communications, with a little bit of program management, some patent work, several stints in mergers and acquisitions, and some investor relations. Lots of learning, travel, smart people to work with, but no singing or religion. Becky found UUSM when her kids were small, and she and her then-husband decided the kids would benefit from a balanced education about world religions. Toddler Danny went across the street to La Petite Croissant, while Natalie and Stephen joined the other middle school-age kids on this side of the street. Their dad joined the board of trustees and argued mightily with Vail, the UUSM minister at that time. While Becky volunteered in RE and edited the printed newsletter, working with Eagle Eyes Jan Barnhart, things blew up between the kid's dad and Vail, and Becky's family left UUSM. The kids grew, and Becky's career grew, and several years later, Becky's husband suddenly left. Amid the chaos, Becky's first positive thought was, I can go back to UUSM. Becky joined the choir and took over management of circle dinners from Bob DeFore. She revamped the rules so that singles like her could sign up individually instead of having to form duos. The success of that program fed Becky's thirst for systems reform. She also joined Masterworks, a local auditioned choral group that performs a variety of works. It was through Masterworks that she met Joel Chapman and invited him to apply for the job of music director. Becky remarried 5 years ago and gained two new adult stepsons and an orange cat, along with a husband whose name also describes his position, Beau. Becky and Beau live in Belmont, with Becky's 13-year-old Cocker Spaniel Poodle mix, Percy. The five kids they've amassed between them range in age from 24 to 32. Two of the five are married, and a third is solidly partnered. Three of the five live in the Bay Area, one in LA, and Baby Danny, who I'm sure loves to be called Baby Danny, who is often a guest tenor with the UUSM choir at Christmas time, lives in Chicago. Becky has been retired for 2 years and loves singing, reading novels, Wordle, Sudoku, cooking, baking, hiking, cycling, swimming, and spending time with her friends. She is not as shy as she used to be. And of course, her crowning achievement is Jobalore. I've tried to get Becky to sit down with me for the podcast for a long time, but she always had some excuse, mostly about being busy. So how did I land this superstar? I had no leverage until she had the idea that I should be interviewed for this podcast and that she should be the person to interview me. I said that she could interview me for the 50th episode of the podcast, but only if she was a guest on the podcast first. And it worked. Although after this very long introduction, some of you might be starting to wonder if Becky is even really here. Becky, welcome to the Connections Podcast.
Hi, Jack. Sorry, Jack. Hi. That was really long.
All right. Well, that's about all the time we have for the podcast today. Thanks, Becky, for stopping by.
Sure. I can't believe I drove all the way over here for this.
Well, you know, you wrote the intro.
You embellish it.
Well, I do have some questions.
Okay.
Ready to start talking?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Tell our listeners about your family, whatever that word means to you. And I ask this knowing that this answer will take a while, but I'm tired of talking anyway, so go.
So, Jack, do you have multicolored markers for your whiteboard? Because we're going to need them.
I do have them, but Becky, our listeners can't see them.
Oh, listeners, okay. So my family is pretty interesting. You heard about my big brother and my little sister, Renee. I grew up with the two of them and my parents in a nice middle-class family in Pennsylvania. When I got to be about age 40, I started searching for my birth family because I'd been adopted as a baby. And some of you might already have heard that story from this fabulous service last Labor Day weekend on reproductive justice. But I was adopted as a baby, as were my brother and sister. And when I was 40, I found my birth mother. And through her, two half-siblings, one of them you may have heard of, Kate Wasserman, and the other one, Hal Wasserman, her Kate's full brother, my half-brother. About a year later, my birth mother decided to give me as a birthday present my birth father. And this guy, 61 years old, had no idea that I existed.
Wow.
My birth father and his wife, I've connected with them as well. They have four children, one of whom passed away young. But I now have three half-brothers through them. That's already a lot of siblings, and I'm close to a lot of them, and I've met cousins on both sides of my birth family, and of course I have cousins in my adoptive family. Then I got married, and I raised two stepkids, Natalie and Steven, some of you know them, and also Danny, I actually bothered to give birth to. Natalie and Steven are both married, and then I married Beau, and I have two adult stepsons, Alex and Austin. So I have this pretty big family. Another addition to them are Natalie and Steven's mom, Julie, who is a really close friend of mine, and her husband, Einar, also. Julie and Einar and Natalie and Steven and sometimes Alex. Everyone who lives in the Bay Area, that's my core local family. And Julie and Einar are close enough to Beau and me that we even have traveled with them on trips. We've gone to Hawaii together, just the four of us.
Yes.
I call Julie my ex-wife-in-law.
Right.
Yeah, that's my family. A lot of fun.
You provided some info in the introduction about your childhood, and we know you didn't love religion as a kid, but you did love making music and academic achievement. What were your favorite subjects in elementary school?
Elementary school was art and probably English. No, for sure, English and science.
Hmm.
Yeah, I was very good at hopscotch also and jump rope.
By the time you got to high school, had your interest changed or maybe become more focused?
I think they probably did not change. I would say that my interest in English expanded to foreign languages. I took German in school and 1 year of French. Focused my interest in science or expanded my interest in science.
How did you make the decision about where to go to college and what your major would be?
Oh my gosh. So I can answer the major one easily. I decided to be an engineering major. And I really think that that is very much a product of my being a boomer. Because I felt like I was going to have to support myself. And I thought, engineers, they can always get a job. They make a decent living. So if I become an engineer, I'll be okay. I was strong enough in science and math and figured I would be an engineer. I went to Dartmouth because it's really a gorgeous, gorgeous campus. It is pretty rural. It's on the Connecticut River in New Hampshire. There's not a lot in New Hampshire besides Dartmouth. It's a beautiful place, and a lot of outdoorsy people go there, and I was not particularly outdoorsy.
But how did you decide Dartmouth? Being in Pennsylvania, made you decide New Hampshire was the place to be?
I did go and interview at Princeton, which was only about an hour's drive from my parents' house. But I wanted to make sure I went far enough away that my parents wouldn't visit me too much. Because I just really wanted to be on my own. That's pretty much how I decided.
Sure. So you started out in engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Is your degree in engineering or did you change your mind along the way?
I did start in engineering, but when I took my first engineering class, which was sophomore year, it was called Engineering Thermodynamics, I immediately hated it. Because I started thinking, like, why did I think I wanted to be in engineering? And I thought, well, I really liked those introductory physics classes. So maybe I'll do that instead. And I talked to my dad, who was an engineer. And my dad said, don't go into physics, because if you go into physics, you're going to have to get a PhD. If you're an engineer, you can just start working after college. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll get a PhD. So that's what I did. I also dropped the English major partway through because, and this is actually revealing about how immature I was as a kid, I couldn't stand it when people criticized my writing. It felt like a dagger to my heart.
Yeah.
And I couldn't care less if I got a problem set in physics wrong. So instead of realizing that what I was passionate about was English and writing and all that kind of thing, I thought, oh, I can do physics because, you know.
No one's attacking me.
I'll just go through and do physics. I finished college and the last half year of senior year, people start interviewing for jobs. And I was like, ugh. Jobs. That doesn't sound any fun at all. I thought, well, what do I like? I like school.
Yeah.
So I figured I might as well go in physics because that's what my degree was in. It worked really well because I didn't get a job till I was almost 30.
Oh, wow. That did work out. And you moved to the Bay Area for graduate school. What year was that? And what made you decide to
go there?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same old story. And again, shows you that 4 years later, I had not done any significant maturing. I applied to graduate schools, and I got into both Yale and Stanford. Back then, being a woman in physics was like an amazing thing. That was a rare and delicate thing to be. Yale flew me in for the weekend. They put me up in a hotel. They wined and dined me the whole weekend. They took me through their lab, and they went all out to get me to go to Yale. And Stanford didn't care. They didn't care if I went there or not. 21-year-old Becky's brain is saying, why would Yale want me so much? I'm not that great a student. It must not really be a very good program.
If it wants me.
If it wants me. So I went to Stanford.
And you'd never lived in the Bay Area before grad school?
I'd never lived west of eastern Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yeah. Have you lived in the Bay Area ever since you finished grad school?
Well, I'd like you to reread my biography from the beginning, because if you did that, you'd know that I lived in Bethesda, Maryland for a little while.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. I did read it.
Yep. Yeah.
But it sounded like that was during grad school.
You're right.
I'm leaving that in.
Don't leave that in.
Yes,
I'm
such will.
A doofus. All right, leave it in. I don't care. People already know I'm a doofus. Okay, so I did live in Maryland in grad school for a year and a half.
I read.
X-ray crystallography, actually. If you want to know all about that, I can tell you more about that. But
no, that's okay.
After I finished graduate school, and I think I was 29 when I finished graduate school, I have never lived anywhere else. I've lived as far north as Belmont and as far south as Mountain View.
Oh.
And a few places in between, and that's it.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's a question. A lot of me, my sense of self, my naturally inquisitive mind, went into coming up with this question. And here's the question.
Okay.
Physics?
That's your question. Does it have multiple exclamation points? Or
Mixed in with question marks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, giving you insight into young Becky's strange way of thinking. Especially when I got to maybe last year of physics in college and then the beginning of physics in graduate school, it got really hard for me. And there was a part of me that thought I should do things that are challenging for me, because the easy things were not things that I valued.
Mm.
Again, a strange way of thinking. And why didn't I have someone to talk to that could help guide me with these things? So part of it was just like, let's see if I can do this, because I'm not that interested in physics. And in fact, the reality is that every single year in graduate school, I decided to quit. Mm-hmm. Every single year, I'd go for these long walks on the beach out at the end of 84.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think, that's it, really. I've got to quit. I'm not interested in it. It's just not interesting to me. I'm quitting. And then somehow, through momentum, I finished. The reality is that since I started working, I've used it, but not very much. Mostly I've used my just technical background, but I've done things that are much more in communication and human interaction, like doing demonstrations and explaining things that are hard to explain, like you do with Justice Circle.
Mm-hmm. If I ask baby Danny what kind of a mother you were when he was a kid, what would he tell me?
First of all, he'd tell you I was goofy, because we had all these silly made-up games that we would play. And I think that we both really enjoyed that. He looks back on that very fondly, and he tells funny stories of the things we used to do, as do Natalie and Steven. But the other thing that he would do is he would complain that we never traveled anywhere except to see family, which is true. A lot of his friends traveled very cool places. We went to see family. Part of that is that I have so much gosh darn family that just barely keeping up with everybody takes a lot of trips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you went to UUSM for a while and then your family left. After your divorce, you came back to UUSM. What year was that when you came back?
That would have been, I think, 2011? I came for the music festival.
Oh, yeah?
Uh-huh. I came for the music festival. Well, I knew everybody from before, and Danielle Siegel, some people will remember her. She's a good friend of Natalie, my stepdaughter. She was singing in the choir then, and she said, you should come and listen. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll come. Nice. And then I walked back in, and I just thought, this is such a great place. And wouldn't it be fun to sing in a choir? Because I hadn't sung since graduate school. I thought, that would be so much fun. So I came back.
So that was what made you come back? You said that in your bio that it was one of the first positive thoughts you had during that time, which was that you'd be able to go back to USM. So was that what made you want to come back? Was choir that Sunday and just being in the community again?
I think that it really happened the same day. My divorce was a surprise to me.
Yes.
And of course, looking back on it, there are about 40,000 signs that I should have seen. But it was a surprise to me at the moment. And the very same day, I was kind of horrified and the rug was pulled out from under me and I didn't know what to do. And I said to myself, well, there's got to be something good about this. Right. And then I thought, I could go back to UUSM. I enjoyed being at UUSM. I loved the people there. And I thought, I'm just going to go back and give it a try. And I walked in, it just felt so good and warm. And people remembered me and came up to me. And even people I thought didn't like me, turns out they didn't like my ex-husband.
I was about to say, who doesn't like you?
So, I don't know. It felt so good to come back and so right. And then joining the choir. The choir is a great place to be when you're going through something. Whether it's an illness or a transition in your family, it's such a wonderful community within the community. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you and Bo meet?
Bo and I met on a dating app, OkCupid. And of course, it's not that simple a story because it never is with me. I recognized him because it turned out we worked for the same gargantuan company since 1993. And I knew his face because he worked in the building next to mine, but his building had the cafeteria and the ATM machine. So sometimes I would walk through his area and I knew his face and I was able to come up with his name. When OkCupid sent me my weekly quiver, because that's what they send you, a quiver.
Where you keep your arrows.
There was Bo's little face. And I sent him a message and I said, isn't it funny when you see people you know on these things? And then he wrote back and he said, do you want to have lunch? And the funny thing was, he had recently been laid off and I was working at a different company. It's when I was working at the small company. And I remember telling one of my friends, I'm not sure if he wants a job or if he's interested in me. We met for falafels in Fremont. That's where my company was. And the rest is history.
All right.
Yeah.
Was it a difficult decision for you to decide just a year or so after you retired to take on this monumental task of becoming the Pobot?
It was a very difficult decision. I had seen what was happening at UUSM and there were so many challenges. And I thought, I'm either going to step back, like completely step back and see what happens. And UUSM might not even be around anymore. Or I'm going to jump in with both feet. And for about 3 months, I kept thinking about it and deciding I was going to just step back. And then one day I woke up and I said, nope, I'm going to jump in with both feet. And it was with Tricia, because Tricia and I had discovered our amazing way of working together and our friendship and our complementary skills when we worked together on the auction. I knew that I couldn't be an effective leader on the board without her, because there's a lot that I'm lacking. She and I talked about it for a long time and decided to do it together. It was a difficult decision.
When you and Tricia agreed to do this, did you know that your first year in the position would be one of the most harrowing years that your USM had had?
Okay, so Jack, I think, at least for me, I could not have been on the board the 2 years previous during the pandemic. I would not have known what to do. That would have been harrowing for me. Some of the congregation will remember that I talked about this, that I felt like that there was something about how we were so broken in so many ways that I wasn't going to make things worse. I didn't know how to do anything, but I figured that we could come in and try and do whatever we can. I have to say that this is one way that I'm a physicist. There are almost no ways that I'm a physicist. But there's one thing about physicists, and you can call it confidence or arrogance, but physicists believe they can do anything, even if they don't know anything about it. Hmm. Physicists have this just outsized idea that maybe they have no idea how to do this thing, but why not just try it? Because maybe you can do it. In fact, one of our staff members at the time said that I had no idea what I was doing. And I thought, well, she's totally right. I don't know what I'm doing. But the truth is that our hearts are in the right place, and we're smart people, and we have life experience. And for the things that we don't know how to do, there's a lot of people who do. And as long as you're open to saying, hey, come in and help on this thing, or correct me when I screw up on this thing or the other thing, that's how we move forward. So I don't think it was that last year was harrowing.
Well, right before you started,
yeah,
our minister left.
Yes.
Under less than ideal circumstances.
Yes. Yes. Our building was in disarray. Mm-hmm. Our DRE soon left.
Right.
There was a pandemic.
Yep.
Yeah, so a few things like that.
We didn't have the sanctuary.
Yeah. There was a lot going on.
Brand new connections person who didn't know what she was doing.
Absolutely. She might be a physicist, a secret physicist.
Okay, so there were some things.
There were things. But really, everything was so broken that you could just fix whatever was nearest or of most interest to you. And then call in other people and say, let's work on this thing together. And that's really what we did all years. We just worked on things. And we made a ton of progress. And we had some great people helping out. Great people joining us. It was kind of a great year. There were moments where I was overwhelmed. But overall, it was just a wonderful year.
You've just finished your first year as president. Can you talk about what UUSM has as a community accomplished in the last year?
Okay, I'll say generally, we're back on our feet in every way. Every single way, we're back on our feet.
Yeah.
We now have a wonderful ministry lined up for next year.
Yes.
And we have a fabulous staff, starting with the person I'm looking at right now in front of me.
Thank you.
We have a music director to find.
Yes.
But that's going to happen.
Yes.
We've already got a few people expressing interest, and they're good. So we will have a good music director coming up. We're coming back together. You've done a lot of work on this, Jack. You have been so welcoming for people coming through the doors that... And we've had people come in from the neighborhood just to see what's going on. Yeah. And they've stayed because they felt like this is such a warm, welcoming place. So I think that there are other people that have done so very much for bringing UUSM back to, not back to, but forward to where we're going. And you're one of them.
What do you hope things will look like in a year when you turn over the leadership of the congregation? Where will UUSM be then?
Some of that will be answered in our board retreats this summer. Mm. We need to figure out what we want to do, what our goals are. Now that we have the luxury of having things back together, we can start to think about what we want to do with it. I definitely wanted to continue the community conversations because I really like those. Mm-hmm. Bringing people in for more and more discussion. I want to continue transparency and trust. Because that was one of the most difficult things that was broken a year ago. Mm-hmm. We will be doing transition work with our two new ministers, which is wonderful.
Yes.
You didn't really ask me this question, but I'll answer it anyway. I'm hoping for myself to continue the personal transformation that I have felt from this past year. I always say that corporate Becky is very well developed. Corporate Becky doesn't need any more development. But what is there besides corporate Becky inside me? Looking at taking some of those skills forward and then learning how to apply it in a, not only a nonprofit, but a faith-based nonprofit. It's really been a growth experience for me, and I've made mistakes. And I've had wonderful people come to me and say, this was not good. This needs to be fixed. And I appreciate that so much, because that's what it's about for me, is to continue to grow in my life, become a better person. That's what I'm personally hoping for next year.
Good. All right. Well, we are going to wrap this up with some quick hitters.
Okay.
I'll ask you a quick question. You give me an answer. Are you ready? Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Number one. What are your grammar pet peeves that you will never give up no matter how common usage changes?
I have a real issue with the difference between that and which, because they are used incorrectly many times. I know that I need to give this up and just loosen up on this one, because they're so easily confused. Jack can't speak because she's laughing so hard. Even in the freaking hymns that we sing.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the choir pieces, we tend to, for some reason, use which a lot of times when it should be that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, not only in rehearsal, though, I'll just sing that instead of which, just to stamp my foot in some way. So that's one of them. Really remembering the lesson that we learned in sixth grade, the difference between dependent and independent clauses. That'll solve it once and for all for everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
If you want, I can do a whole section on that.
Maybe another time. Okay. Maybe when I start my grammar podcast, you okay. can be a guest.
That's fair enough. Okay, that sounds good. That sounds good.
What would a perfect lunch be like for you? What and where?
Okay. I don't care about lunch. Lunch is my third favorite meal.
Okay.
I'm very opportunistic when it comes to lunch. I will just eat leftovers or any random thing I can put together. Now, breakfast is very important to me.
So would you rather make this a breakfast question?
I'd rather it be breakfast or dinner. Okay, breakfast. The perfect breakfast for me is what I eat every day. I try not to be too obnoxious about it. But every day I have 170 grams of non-fat Greek yogurt. And a piece of fruit. Today I had an apple and actually some blueberries too. And a handful of walnuts. Or sometimes I'll go wild and have almonds instead of walnuts. Yep, that's my favorite breakfast. Where would be at my kitchen table?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Imaginative.
Yeah, I know.
If you could wake up tomorrow with one superpower, what would it be?
Oh, can we come back to that one? I forgot to think about it.
You don't know what superpower you want. Would you rather be able to fly or to be invisible?
Ugh. Fly.
Fly?
But I can fly. Business class is what I really like, but I'm too cheap to pay for it. Mm. Invisible would be cool. I'd take that if that's all you had to offer. The thing about invisible, though, I mean, would it have any negative health effects if you did it, like, several times? But I have a lot of questions before I agree to these things.
Right. Except that since it's a superpower, not that many people have been invisible, so that we don't have any large-scale studies on the long-term effects of repeated periods of invisibility.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I'll move
on. I know I disappointed you on that one. I meant to think about it and then I forgot.
What is the most used app on your iPhone?
Well, you know this one. It is my texting app.
Yes.
Because I text people, and there are some people who have even said to me, would you please not text me when it's not truly urgent? Because I don't like it when I wake up in the morning and I see your texts and it's not urgent. And I realize, okay, yes, I get that. Some people don't like that. So I try to remember who likes what. And I try to send email to people who like email and text to people who don't mind my constant texts.
You're so nice.
No, I'm not.
True.
Just weird.
But in this one way.
Oh, I don't know. If I was nice, I would have thought of it without someone having to tell me.
What's the best part of being Percy's mom?
Oh, he's so cute. And he's so funny. And he is, I don't know if you know this about him, but he's species queer.
Okay.
He's half dog and half cat and half rabbit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which part of his 150% is rabbit?
He loves raw, crunchy vegetables. Any kind, even radishes, like hot radishes. He loves broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage cores, anything that's crunchy. That's his rabbit part. But his cat part's funnier.
Okay, what's his cat part?
His sibling, Jake, the orange cat, taught him how to purr. Yes.
He purrs?
Yes, he purrs. So if he's really happy, he'll do this like really little, like low growl.
That's his purr?
That's his purr. It's very cute. Yeah.
And then what part of him is dog?
Yeah. Right. Well, he looks like a dog.
Okay.
I guess that's most of it.
Okay.
He looks like a dog.
All right. What are you reading right now?
Ah, I am reading 2 books right now.
Okay.
One of them is a book that my friend Lori Fox, I don't know if you know her.
Is she a congregant here?
She is.
I've seen her name.
Well, here's the way you would probably know her. She's in this famous trio called Jabalore.
She's
the lore of Jabalore.
She's the lore?
She's the lore of Jabalore.
Oh my gosh. And you know her?
I know her. Yeah.
I mean, like you
she's
like.
She's my friend.
Oh my
I know.
Gosh.
I know.
She said you have her contact info?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So could you get me an
autograph? I have to talk to her first. I don't give out contacts for other people without checking with them.
Well, sure. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So she suggested a book called 4,000 Weeks, and it's by Oliver Berkman.
Okay.
It's kind of a time management book, but it's almost like a reverse time management book, because it's not about how you can become more efficient and pack more and more into your life.
Okay.
It's about how you can recognize that you've got 4,000 weeks on Earth, and how do you want to use them? And if you learn to become super efficient, more things are just going to flow your way. And so you're going to feel like you're never getting things completely done. You're never going to get your work done. You're never going to be a good mom. You're never going to be a good spouse. You're never going to have enough time for your friends. So it's a way of reshaping your thinking so that you're making time for the things that are important to you.
Hmm.
So Lori had mentioned that this book changed her life, which is a big statement.
It is.
From a wise woman.
Yes.
So I bought this book and I love it, and I have already sent it to other people. So that's the nonfiction book that I'm reading. And then the fiction book I'm reading is called Stolen, not Stolen like the pastry.
No.
Stolen like the past.
Okay.
And it's translated from the Swedish, and the author's name, and I probably will mispronounce it because I don't know how to pronounce Swedish, is Anne Helene Lestedis.
Okay.
I may even recommend it to book group because... And I don't know how they take recommendations because I'm not in book group.
That's actually the first rule of book club is that you have to be in book club to make
so
a recommendation.
Maybe I can't do this, but maybe Deanna's listening and she'll just look the other way or something. What is stolen in this book is reindeer.
Hmm.
And they're stolen from an indigenous Swedish people who are reindeer herders. They're not treated well. It's fascinating right now, and it's told from the point of view of a 9-year-old girl.
Hmm.
She is the daughter of a reindeer herder. Really interesting book.
What old technology do you miss in 2023?
See, I don't even understand this question. What do you mean by old technology? What could be old technology?
You know what? I'll tell you one thing. I miss.
Okay.
Also, I gave you these questions a long time ago, and you could have just said,
I forgot. I was going to ask you about that. Just like I was going to think about my superpower.
Right. I miss appointment television. Do you remember the days when you had to be home on Thursday nights at 7 if you wanted to watch whatever your appointment TV was? I love streaming. Mm-hmm. I hardly ever turn an actual television on. I watch things on my small screen and I stream them. I love the technology of now, but I miss that feeling of everybody that you know is watching this show right now. So you know tomorrow everybody's going to be talking about this show. And there was no such thing as, spoiler alert, that didn't exist because everybody watched all the shows at the same time. I miss that.
I can't think of any old technology that I miss because the new technology's better.
Well, sure. Yeah. But there's nothing that you have a nostalgic feeling for, maybe?
No.
Wow.
You can cut this one out if you want.
Yeah.
Like, you can agree, hey, everybody who likes the Great British Baking Show, let's all watch it Monday night at 8:30.
No, people don't do that.
No. Okay. So they could.
You can agree. No, this was more
of... Maybe you can't agree.
More of a great societal thing that you did together.
No. Sorry.
So your commentary on doing things as a society is blah.
No, I think we can... All right. Okay. Here's something. And I don't know if this really counts, but I'll say it anyway.
Okay.
I miss the time when we weren't all just glued to our phones.
Well, sure.
Because I'm glued to my phone. I'm really bad about it.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. And yet...
There it is.
There it is.
Right there in front of you.
Yeah.
Do more of what makes you forget to look at your phone.
Yeah. There we go.
What's the best nighttime snack?
Okay. You're going to hate this. I never eat after
dinner. I knew you were going to say
I never eat after dinner. And it's not because I'm like the most virtuous person on earth. It's that I am not hungry after dinner. I'm just not. I totally lose my appetite. So okay. I drink tea.
Okay. That's what an interesting nighttime snack.
Decaf tea.
Okay. So as people are listening to this, I want to also be speaking to people who are going to be on the podcast in the future.
Yeah.
Okay. So you people who haven't already been on the podcast, it's time for you to step up and be on the podcast. And when you are, you need to know that I will give you all the questions in advance. And I will tell you in advance, if there's some question you don't want me to ask, just tell me. I'll take it out. If there's some question you do want me to ask, tell me. I'll put it in. So when you look over the questions, if your answer is, I don't have one, I hate lunch, or I can't think of any superpowers, or I don't know any old technologies or even what you mean, and I don't eat a nighttime snack, then the thing to do would be to simply say, Jack, you might want to ask me some other questions.
All right.
What's the best thing about cariumas?
The best thing about cariumas, and for those of you who don't know what cariumas are, look at my feet, Jack's feet, Lori's feet, and Trisha's feet, because we all have cariumas. They are these really cool sneakers, and they come in all kinds of colors and patterns and even materials. What I like about them is that they're a belonging thing for us.
Yes.
That we all have them. And Jack and I, turns out a lot of people won't know this about us, but we have the same size feet. Yes. So we've both agreed that in each other's wills, we get each other's cariumas. But they're comfortable. They're nice and squishy. They have really good support for sneakers. They're green,
For the earth.
You have to order them straight from the manufacturer, so you can't get them through Amazon, which is good. Yeah.
True. You can look at any of those people's feet that Becky mentioned, and they might be wearing their cariumas. Mm-hmm. But if you look at my feet, they will be wearing.
That's true. You have, okay, let me just ask you this. How many pairs do you have?
I am not the one being interviewed today.
But you will be. That will be one of my questions.
Okay. And you know what I'm going to say when you ask me that?
I don't know.
I don't know. I never counted them. I have no idea. I meant to do that.
Yeah.
But I just didn't. I just didn't.
Okay. Well, you can ask me how many I have.
How many do you have?
I have... okay, I have the polka dot ones.
Yes.
I have pink ones. Mm-hmm. I have blue suede ones.
Yes.
And I have all gray.
Okay.
I think that's it. So I think I have four.
Pair?
I think
okay.
four.
All right.
Seems like I have another one, but I can't think of it right now.
Let's go on to another question. What's the best board game?
The best board game is one that probably no one's ever heard of, which is called Conflict. My kids know it. I snagged it from my parents, so we had it as kids. Mm. It was one of the few games that my sister and brother and I played together. Mm. And the reason there were so few is that my brother is 5 years older than me and 7 years older than my sister, so he didn't mostly want to play with little girls. But Conflict was something that we enjoyed together.
What's the best Wordle strategy?
Okay. I explicitly have chosen not to employ the best Wordle strategy. I have my own Wordle strategy. This is not the most effective Wordle strategy,
okay.
But I have my own rules. And my rule is that the first word that you guess, it has to be a five-letter word, the first word can only have one vowel. Hmm. And it has to be one you haven't thought of before to use as a first word. So that's pretty restrictive. And I don't know that anyone else plays it that way. And then after that, I have special rules for myself, which are if you have a correct letter in the correct place, you have to keep it there all the way down the board. And if you have the correct letter in the wrong space, you have to move it somewhere else, but you can't take it off the board. These two rules that I've employed for myself are not the most effective Wordle strategy, but that's my Wordle strategy. I think for full disclosure, I would like to say that Jack and Lori and I have an ongoing text stream. It's called Jobalore for some reason, where we post our Wordle results pretty much every day.
Every day, yeah.
And Jack usually beats me because I think she just has a more efficient strategy.
Yeah. What's the best religion?
Unitarian Universalism.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so great?
Oh, I didn't even ask that. Are you allowed to ask questions that aren't on the list?
If you're allowed not to prepare for questions that are on the list, then I'm allowed to ask questions that aren't.
That's fair enough.
Thanks, Becky. Mm-hmm. I really do appreciate you sitting down with me. We've been talking for more than an hour.
You're kidding me. See, this is what I was worried about. I warned you about that. I said, what happens if we just go on and on? I'm sorry, everybody.
No, it was fun. It was so much fun. Yeah. We have fun.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Becky.
Thank you for doing this, Jack. I've so much enjoyed listening to them all and learning so much about all of our people. And yeah, thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Thanks also to our listeners. Keep making connections.